Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I'd like to read or share a recent poignant story, an especially interesting essay, or some philosophical quotes or thoughts, or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that we had a great response last week when we were reading a little poetry by Robert Frost, and perhaps we'll have a little time to get to that again today, which I'd love to do. I'm going to read a little essay from Jack Spadafore, a very talented writer from Park Ridge, talking a little bit about spring. And he entitles his essay, Charging Up for a Spring Fling. Jack writes, "These are troubled days, but not always for the reasons we are given. It is spring in the city, and there is a resistless imperative hidden in its otherwise tranquil days. Spring gets paired with many different things, spring training, spring cleaning, spring love. But the pairing that gets capitalized is usually spring driving, the great all-American love affair with our cars. Psychologists and sociologists have tried to explain this passion scientifically. Oedipal complexes, class warfare, and such. But ask any Brooks Brother wearing banker and Chanel fragranced VIP over weekend cocktails, they'll admit it tends a little toward addiction. During the snow and ice of winter, we've probably ignored this affair, taking our cars for granted. Ask your car wash owner, he's missed you. But now it's spring, when more daylight hours tell us we can no longer shun our chromed betrothed. After all, it, despite the madness of Wall Street and Baghdad, is still our statement to the world. Large in black or sporty in red, our car still speaks for us. It tells everyone how rich or smart or cool or conservative we are. Well, not really, but the ads want us to believe that. So, fellow drivers, I leave it to you. What should we do in the bright springtime days ahead? Give our beloved a luxury bath, of course, but real devotion calls for more. Perhaps a new set of radials, a high-gloss wax treatment, maybe a fresh collection of CDs. Or, say, what about driving it past some different scenery for a change? The one thing we may have to guard against? A new lover. Yes, new domestics and foreigns are both out there smiling and winking as they try to seduce us to change partners. Sometimes they're hard to resist, what with all those gleaming O's on their sexy speedometers. It's the snake in the garden all over again. To bite or not to bite? Let the question stand before you in all its naked honesty. Then try to explain your decision to your car as affectionately as you can. Either way, affairs of the heart must not be rushed." Anthropomorphizing a little bit with our cars, but nonetheless, charging up for a spring fling. In fact, last couple of days have been very warm, and we've seen a lot of convertibles with the tops down, people enjoying the weather, wind blowing in their hair. You know how that goes. I leave my air conditioning on myself, but nonetheless. I want to get the word on a couple special occasions coming up. Our good friend Elizabeth Doyle, on Monday, May 7th, from 8 to 11, singer-pianist Elizabeth Doyle celebrates Peggy Lee's birthday month as part of the Sophisticated Ladies series at the Jazz Showcase. To honor the life and lyrics of the woman Duke Ellington dubbed the Elegant One, Doyle will be joined by Chris White, Frank Portalise, Jim Cox, and Tim Davis. Trumpet player Art Hoyle, drummer Jerry Coleman, and pianists Larry Novak, Bobby Schiff, and Frank Winkler, who were each at one time in Peggy Lee's band, will make guest appearances. Elizabeth Doyle, a singer, pianist, composer, and lyricist in her own right, has been an ardent fan of the Peggy Lee songbook since her childhood in South Dakota, Lee being from North Dakota. In 2007, Elizabeth Doyle was a featured guest of Lee's friend and song collaborator Marion McPartland, host of National Public Radio Piano Jazz, who wrote, Elizabeth Doyle is one of Chicago's most captivating performers. She blends a dreamy vocal style with swinging piano playing, deftly accompanying herself on both classic standards and her own unique compositions. Doyle plans to make the Peggy Lee Birthday Tribute an annual event. Doyle will be joined for the second set by fellow sophisticated ladies, our good friend K.T. McCammon, who's part of Kevin Moore Presents, and Claudia O'Mell, of course, who does such a great job with her dedicated French shows. So that's coming up on Monday, May 7th, from 8 to 11 at the Jazz Showcase. And certainly, if you want some information, you can call the Jazz Showcase, or it's located in Dearborn Station, 806 South Plymouth Court. So Elizabeth Doyle, K.T. McCammon, and Claudia O'Mell. That'd be great. Great evening. I've seen Elizabeth. She's played at so many different places. She was just with Daryl Nitz, our good pal, in his show about Judy Garland at Carnegie Hall, and she's certainly been at the Coke Door and the Drake and a lot of different places. And you've seen her around, but she's a very, very talented lady. And also coming up on Saturday, May 5th at 8 and Sunday, May 6th at 4 at Davenport's, Carla Gordon and Scott Urban, Wanted, Dead or Alive for the Murder of America's Best Lyrics, with Bob Marine on the piano in Parody Oxycle, From Urbanity to Insanity. Davenport's, of course, located at 1383 North Milwaukee. Chicagoland's favorite parody writers, Carla Gordon and Scott Urban, will be massacring the best lyrics of Broadway and cabaret in Parody Oxycle, From Urbanity to Insanity. Directed by Ernie Lane and with musical direction by Mr. Bob Marine, who will join in the musical mayhem. Join us at Davenport's Saturday, May 5th at 8, or Sunday, May 6th at 4, for a musical smartass that knows no bounds. Carla comes up with some great lyrics. And Scott Urban's a very, very talented man himself. And then on Mother's Day, Mom doesn't want you to give her another bottle of cheesy cologne. What she wants most on Mother's Day is to hear you sing. Bring your mom and join Becky Menzi and Carla Gordon at Little Bucharest Bistro and sing her favorite song. Now, if you want Carla and Becky to sing it, be nice to them, they will. Yummy food and good booze. Little Bucharest Bistro, located at 3661 North Elston, for reservation 773-604-8500. And that's mid-afternoon on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 13th. Don't forget that. But again, Parody Oxycle with Scott Urban and Carla Gordon at Davenport's, 1383 North Milwaukee. And for information, the phone number is 773-278-1830. And don't forget this for Mother's Day. Our good friends at Swirls, strawberry, I'm looking at a picture, this is gorgeous, strawberry shortcake, moist vanilla cake, filled with fresh strawberry preserve and cream cheese buttercream, coated with a layer of white chocolate, topped with homemade shortbread cookie and strawberry buttercream, garnished with edible pink pearls, just for Mom. Available and gluten-free. And that's, you know, I would kind of kid about that, but that's kind of important, especially given that one of our guests on our show today is going to be chatting a little bit about gluten as it relates to autism and so forth. So get the gluten-free cupcakes. Of course, at Swirls, our favorite place, cupcakes make people happy. Pam Rose, our good pal, located at 705 West Belden. For information, 773-404-2253. And that's right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital. So strawberry shortbread cupcakes. Ooh, gluten-free. Delicious. You know, you've walked around town in some of the suburbs, and you've seen these tags hanging from the trees, different trees, green tags. Well, this is what those represent. Ever wonder how much a tree is really worth? In celebration of Arbor Day, several thousand trees in Chicago and seven other communities, Glen Ellen, Glendale Heights, Lombard, Wheaton, Downers Grove, Lyle, and Naperville, are displaying green tags proclaiming their environmental value in dollars. The green tags, which will be on display through May 5th, were created by the Morton Arboretum and hung by volunteers from corporate and community organizations. The tags showcase how it pays to plant trees by placing a value on electrical energy savings, carbon reduction, and property value impact. Scientifically measurable tree benefits include shading homes so homeowners can reduce the amount of cooling energy they use in summer, removing carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas, from the air, converting it to carbon and storing it in their wood for decades or centuries. That's interesting. Centuries. And catching rain so as to decrease the amount of water flowing into stormwater systems. Interesting. So that's what all those tags represent. There's usually a price tag on there also. One is, let's say, it's the tree gives back $2,000 worth of environmental benefits over the next 15 years. Quite remarkable, which means you plant a tree. And what's the old saying? The best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago or today? So get out and plant one. And you get some more information if you want to go to the Morton Arboretum's website. But they're very interesting. So that's what those tags are, and they'll be there till the 5th. And interesting, very interesting what those are for. Always something, right? Very busy show today, very interesting show today, intellectually and culturally stimulating. But we're going to start with a little music from Frank Sinatra in his CD, The Heart of the Matter. Frank Sinatra sings songs about love. Written by Nelson Riddle, kind of a song of lilting loneliness and desperate heartbreak, one of his classics. In this wee small hours of the morning, we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl and never ever think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most of lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her.
Frank Sinatra in the wee small hours of the morning. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. When you notice a cat in profound meditation, the reason I tell you is always the same. His mind is engaged in a rapt contemplation of the thought, of the thought, of the thought of his name. His ineffable, effable, and ineffable, deep and inscrutable, singular name. Tonight is a particularly special night of the year when the tribe of Jellicle cats unites to celebrate who they are. They emerge from the darkened landscape into a larger-than-life junkyard, singing of their unique abilities and special qualities. Cats, Now and Forever, based on the children's work written by T.S. Eliot, Opossum's Book of Practical Cats, a childhood favorite of Andrew Lloyd Webber. It also won both the Tony Award and Olivier Award for Best Musical. one of the longest-running musicals of all time, a worldwide favorite for audiences of all ages. Cats will run through Sunday, May 6th at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning performer, having been seen in such hits as West Side Story and The Music Man, former student having studied at both the Pacific Conservatory for the Arts and the School of the Philadelphia Ballet, one of the brightest young stars in the world of music theater, now starring as Munkustrap, who is the narrator and leader of the Jellicle Cats, and the Tony Award-winning musical classic by Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cats, now through May 6th at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, Mr. Daniel Self. Daniel, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. First time in Chicago, Daniel?
Yes, sir. I've been through your airport many times.
Well, of course, it's quick here. You're only here for a week, though.
Yes, sir. It's not quite enough time. It's a beautiful place.
Are you jumping in and out of the cities that quickly?
Yes, sometimes even quicker.
Really?
We have week sit-downs. We have half weeks. We even have a few one- or two-nighters.
Wow. A lot of moving around. Of course, cats move fast like that, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, we enjoyed it. As I said before, I must have seen it five or six times, but it was great seeing it the other evening. And, you know, you lose that. Of course, you play it a lot, but seeing it again and again, you just remember the first time you saw it, and you still have that same enthusiasm and energy for it.
Well, you know, I actually grew up watching Cats like many of my castmates, and to be honest, we never lost the joy of seeing it, and we never lose the joy of performing it either.
Well, it must be like that, because just the way the group is together, it almost seems like a family, and it seems like that enthusiasm you have every night, you can't fake that, Daniel. You know yourself as a performer, and it shows.
Well, you know, Kevin, what's so beautiful about the work that we get to do is, as you said, we really are, we're a tribe up there, we're a family, and you know, one of us will be tired one day, one of us will be grumpy one day, but when you get up on that stage and we look each other in the eye and we're there for each other, you know, we keep each other up and we keep each other there, and we remind each other that we're here to tell this beautiful story to as many people as we possibly can.
Well, you never know when that little one who's out in the audience is there for the first time, even though her parents or her grandparents have seen it a couple times, but that little one is seeing Cats for the first time, and when the cats come out into the audience and they talk and look at everybody and infiltrate through the audience, I mean, it's just a special time.
It's one of my favorite moments of every single show, because you're right. I mean, with every sort of show, when you're up there on that stage and you know the audience is out there in the darkness, you know that there's a little child who's getting touched, who's getting moved. But one of the beautiful things about this show is we get to go out and we get to actually see those faces with those wide eyes. It's beautiful every night.
And it was nice, too, the other evening, and sometimes they haven't done this in Cats, Daniel, is Old Deuteronomy sat up on the stage during the intermission, and sometimes the kids come up and sometimes they don't, of course, but that was nice that he kind of stayed there.
Yeah, you know, we think it's really important, especially with a show like this, to maintain the integrity of the reality of that junkyard, and such a night as this, especially with the entrance of Grisabella, who sings that that very iconic song, Memory. Right after that, you know, the Old Deuteronomy is the one cat witness to that moment.
Right.
And so keeping him out there through the time when the audience gets to take a break, reminding them that when they come back, they haven't gone away, that the junkyard's still there, still waiting for them.
Every individual cat has his own story to tell, and each one is enjoyable in itself, little vignettes of the life of these cats.
Right.
Do all of the all of your fellow cast members, do they intertwine as they interact in the various roles? Some play a couple different roles and they twitch between performances?
Well, for the most part, we do have a primary cast that play the same parts every night. I, for instance, always play Munkustrap. However, we do have a couple of very unique roles that are joining us this year for the first time since the Broadway production.
Hmm.
And those are the psychic twins known as Korakopat and Tantamile.
Right.
Now, these two characters are particularly special because when you do go on the road with a show as big and as involved as one such as Cats, you bring along a group of people known as swing performers. And they're there. They know all of our roles. I don't know how they do it, but they know just about everything that everyone does on that stage. And in the unfortunate and unlikely event that one of us gets hurt or has to step out of a performance, they're there to immediately step in to keep the show going, to keep the magic alive. And one of the very unique things about this performance, I've never, ever seen it before, is that two of that company are always on stage with us as these two psychic twins.
Hmm.
And that's a constantly rotating basis. So if you come to one show and you come a couple days later, those two psychic twins will actually be different actors.
Now, why were they added into the new... they were always there, but why were they added into the new production?
As I said, they were there for the Broadway production, mm-hmm. And they went away for a number of reasons. But this year, there was a lot of discussion. Our director and re-choreographer, Richard Stafford, who put back up faithfully the original Gillian Lynn choreography, he fought really hard to bring these two very special characters back into the fold to show them to these new audiences.
Well, that's a very talented person who's got to know all the different roles. A swing bird, boy.
Their job is absolutely admirable in so many ways.
Now, of course, you look at some of the great work that Andrew Lloyd Webber did, Cats and Evita and Jesus Christ Superstar and Joseph and Starlight Express and Sunset Boulevard and Phantom, one of my favorites, Whistle Down the Wind, not as certainly as popular as some of the other ones. Have you had the chance to meet Mr. Webber?
No, personally, I have not, but certainly feel like I've met him through performing faithfully his work every night.
Now, you, as a young person, you saw this, you saw his work, and did you ever envision that you'd be on stage performing it?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, even, it was funny, the day I went to audition for this particular role, it wasn't until after I'd gotten an offer to come on board and to play this part, did I just have to sit down with myself for a minute and be like, I grew up watching this character and admiring this particular character and just thinking, you know, what a strong figure he was. And that's a big moment for a person to realize, okay, I have to step into this now. And it's now my responsibility to bring that same strength for all the kids out there that are going to be watching me.
Well, Munkustrap is the narrator, and he's kind of the leader of the Jellicle Cats, and he's kind of the glue that holds everything together.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a beautiful thing to be. And like I said, especially getting out there every night, it's such a full and complex and varied show that being able to really have my fingers in all the different pies and really just looking at everything and keeping everything together, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and it's a privilege.
When you were auditioning, Daniel, did you want this specific role?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's as I said, it's always been one I've admired greatly.
How long have you been in the production? How long do you have your contract go?
This is my first year with the production. Mm-hmm. We do have some performers that have been with the production for many years.
Yeah.
But this is my first year. I auditioned in October. And we started rehearsing just the beginning of November, and then we got on the road beginning of December.
Wow, that's pretty quick. Of course, you're from a great conservatory, the Pacific Conservatory for the Arts, some great alumni like Kathy Bates and Sherry Belafonte and Kelly McGillis, and even Robin Williams went there.
That's
and,
great.
Of course, with yourself, those are all the famous alumni.
Right. And it's an incredible place, the Pacific Conservatory of the Performing Arts. It's on the central coast of California, and it really it's taught me everything I know. I mean, I actually ended up leaving university to go to the conservatory mm-hmm. so that I could get more specified training, and that's really what they provide. They give you very specific and strong training in how to do this as a job, as a profession,
mm-hmm.
And not just as something that you do for fun.
Where are you from originally, Daniel?
I'm from Southern California. I'm from just 45 minutes north of Los Angeles, called the Antelope Valley.
Okay. And this is a place that you knew about and you wanted to aspire to get to the conservatory.
It's true. This conservatory also is attached to a professional company called PCPA Theater Fest that has a very good reputation on the West Coast and has many attachments and alumni throughout many prominent regional theaters. And the people I've met and the things I've learned have just served me as I've embarked upon my career.
Of course, you have a lot of people out in the audience, Daniel, is watching what you do, and just like you not too many years ago, you thought, geez, maybe someday I'll be up there, and now you are. And I suppose all those people, young people that are looking at you and say, someday I'd like to be up there. Who were you, some of the people you looked up to or mentors to you as you were beginning to mold yourself as a performer?
Oh, well, most of them were the faculty at PCPA Theater Fest. I'd have to say that my primary mentor and one of my dearest friends to this day, his name is Michael Jenkinson. He's a choreographer and director based at PCPA Theater Fest, but he's done a lot of work in other places throughout the country as well. He actually started out touring, and he's just he's a brilliant man. He's a brilliant artist, and one of the things that I admire most about him is his ability to not only embody a character fully and to really be in that moment and tell those stories to those audience members. But now that he's stepping back from acting and becoming more of a director and a choreographer, his eye and his vision and his ability to see that the way that you tell the story and the way that you craft a show from beginning to end is really what's going to drive it home and make it last. And I aspire to be just like that.
You know, we have all have teachers like that, don't we, Daniel? It's people who affect eternity. You never know when their influence begins or ends, but it's always there.
Right.
Yeah. There's no better way to introduce your family to the wonders of live theater than with the magic, the mystery, the memory of Cats, what began as a musical about cats after Andrew Lloyd Webber picked up a book of poems in an airport bookshop, became the longest-running show in Broadway's history. Winner of 7 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Cats features 20 of Andrew Lloyd Webber's timeless melodies, including the hit song Memory. On the line with us right now, one of the stars of Cats, Daniel Self, who portrays the narrator, Munkus Trapp. Daniel, a pleasure to chat with you. I wish you had a little more time to spend in Chicago, but I guess from me and from the audience and everybody who's come out to see Cats, you know, and please relay this to the performers. Thank you for sharing your unique talents with all of us and bringing such joy. Cats is just a wonderful experience in the theater.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. It really is a true privilege.
And safe travels.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Daniel. Daniel Self, one of the stars of Cats. He portrays Munkus Trapp, the narrator. You hear him first talking about what's going to be happening with Cats. Just a great evening in the theater. It's a great way to introduce kids to the theater. Give them a little background of what it's all about, of course, from T.S. Eliot's group of poems, Opossum's Book of Practical Cats, which was a childhood favorite of Andrew Lloyd Webber's. They'll love it. That's something they'll always remember. They'll remember the music, and as they get older, they'll enjoy it in a different way, and someday they'll take their own kids and see it. Hopefully it'll be around that long. So Cats, now through May 6th at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph. For information, 800-775-2000. Join Laura Freeman as she celebrates the ladies of the 60s, Leslie Gore, Mary Wells, the Supremes, and many more. Martha and the Vandellas in 1964, and Connie Francis, the top female vocalist of the 50s. Those are the bookends. When we talk about music from the 1960s, most people think of Bob Dylan, the Beatles, and Jimi Hendrix, but that is really just part of the story. That small window of about 8 years changed music forever with the birth of a genre most historians don't even acknowledge, the birth of bubblegum pop. Suddenly, the airwaves were jumping with the sound of women. No, girls, teenage girls and their teenage problems. Boy, I certainly had a few of those. Join Laura Freeman as she celebrates the sounds of the Vandellas, the Marvelettes, the Supremes, the Ronettes, Dion, Dusty, Leslie, Mary, and more. And, of course, It's My Party, the girls and the groups of the early 60s at 8 o'clock, Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee, on May 12th, May 19th, and May 26th. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning entertainer, nationally recognized vocalist, one of Chicago's classic and classy ladies of the cabaret, a performer who both sets the standard and defines the essence of excellence in live performance on stage, now presenting her newest show, It's My Party, the girls and the groups of the 60s, on May 12th, 19th, and 26th at 8 o'clock at Davenport's, 1383 North Milwaukee, Ms. Laura Freeman. Laura, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so looking forward to Jimmy Mack at the show. I can't tell you.
I know you've been really wanting that song. Unfortunately, it's not in the show, but I would sing it for you anytime you want.
Oh, I got to sign up. Oh, jeez. Well, this sounds exciting. You're too young. You don't even remember these people. Who are you kidding?
Well, you know, my...
Your mother used to sing these to you. That's what it is.
Yeah. My parents were actually very young when I was born. I'm the oldest of four. And my mom had all of these records, and I would dance around my bedroom to Leslie Gore and the Marvelettes and the Supremes, and I loved this music. It's so fun and infectious, and I just think it's a really good time. So
it's happy music. It really is. It's even when it's a sad story, it's happy music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look back and all these great women groups, and it's funny how you bookend Connie Francis on the early side of the 50s, and of course Martha Vandellas in the 1964. Right. But it's fun music to listen to, and these were just young kids doing their thing. I get a kick out of, you know, I'm showing my age here a little bit, but watching some of the PBS specials when all of these women come back and they sing some of their hits. Of course, they're a few years older now, right. Of course. But you know what? They sound the same. It still sounds great.
Oh, yeah. My very first concert that I went to, I went with my mom to Morris Civic Auditorium. It has like a 600 seat in my hometown of South Bend, Indiana. And we saw Leslie Gore and Mary Wells and I think it was the the Angels, I think. And anyway, the hugest memory I have of this concert was the last song of the night was "You Don't Own Me" by Leslie Gore.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And the entire dark, full theater started singing along with her. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, this is what I want. This, I want this to happen in my lifetime.
You know, it's... And it is happening because everywhere you sing, people are getting up and you're moving them. That's the truth. You know, a lot of people, you look at Leslie Gore, she had a boatload of hits. You look at Dionne Warwick, of course, so too many to even mention, Dusty Springfield and so forth. And, of course, all the girl groups. It must have been difficult just to kind of siphon down the hits that you wanted to use because they had so many of them.
We have a lot of medleys. Because I wanted to get so many songs in, because you're right, and they're all so great. And I think I 3, 6, 9, 12. I think I have 30 songs in the show.
Wow, that's. Is there an intermission? Is it one just?
No, some of them are really a small little.
Okay. I was going to bring a lunch if you. Well, you know, you've done so many different shows, different. Concepts. You did, of course, Doris Day and Sentimental Journey and Julie Andrews, The Hills Are Alive, Miss Cass with, of course, those very talented ladies, and now It's My Party. What do you just get a thought, and that thought germinates, and then you kind of research it, and you go, maybe this will work?
Yeah, you know, this one, I happened to be in the library doing some research on another show. In fact, I think I was looking around at Gershwin for a show that I did for you recently. And I happened to pick up an encyclopedia of music. It was, you know, a coffee table book with lots of pictures and stuff.
Sure.
And it went from Buddy Holly to the Beatles. And it skipped everything in between. The next page had Motown with the Supremes, but it didn't have any of the people that I was listening to at that point. And I thought, wow, I cannot believe that they've entirely skipped that important little segment of music. So I thought this would be a really interesting thing to sing about, to talk about.
You know, you mentioned, of course, our show at the Metropolis, our Gershwin show, which was a sellout, which everybody certainly enjoyed, as all the shows that we do in and around, and you are such an integral part of Kevin Moore Presents. I'm always amazed, Laura, very frankly, and I'm going to say this a little personally here, though. How do you remember all the lyrics? I mean, you got so many different songs get going, and how do you remember all the lyrics, all these different songs?
I don't know. practice.
Now, do you listen to them constantly, whether you get them on an iPad or iPod or whatever?
Yeah, you know, that is the beauty of technology. I stick on a playlist into my iPod, and then on the bus, on the train, if I'm just sitting there, if I am sitting someplace for longer than 10 minutes, there's a song going through my head, and I'm checking the lyrics.
That's interesting. Well, I want you to share that with Tommy because he forgot some words the other day. I'm just kidding. I was just kidding. We had a great time, and it was just a wonderful evening. And, of course, it's going to be like that. Now, you have three shows, the 12th, the 19th, and the 26th. And who's going to be the musical director?
Enormously talented Becky Menzies.
I know her.
I'm sure you do.
Of course, Becky's just one of the talented ladies in Chicago, and she probably came up with some good ideas to help you put this thing together, huh?
Oh, of course. I would lay down the five songs that I wanted to do of Leslie's, and especially the Supremes, actually, because there's an enormous wealth of material that they did during this time period. And I was like, well, I want to put as many as possible in this. How can we make it still make a story and make it little snippets? So I desperately needed her to make it make sense musically, yeah.
No, nobody does that better than Becky. No. What are some of the thoughts you have coming up? Of course, you've, as I said before, you've done Doris Day, Julie Andrews, and a lot of Broadway musical theater and so forth. What are some that you haven't done that you would aspire to, that you would like to maybe sing the songs of certain performers?
You know, I have thought about maybe doing a... And this is a little out there, but I thought about doing like Anita Baker and Basha and Sade and making it contemporary for like a 30s, 40s set.
Mm-hmm.
Just because every time I do a show, I try to knock 10 years off of the primary target of my audience, just because it's smart, you know.
Sure.
It allows you to play a lot of different venues and hit a lot of different demographics for a theater owner, I think.
At what age did you realize that, you know what, I have a pretty decent voice, I would like to maybe make a career of being a vocalist?
You know, in grade school, you have to fill out the what you want to be when you grow up.
Sure.
Yeah, I think by third grade, I was putting in singer.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? When I was that young, we sing in the choir, and they say, well, you just mouth the words, Kevin. Much like you guys do when we do our show. Who did you look up to as some of the performers you'd like to emulate?
Oh, I loved Judy Garland and Barbara Streisand. I loved Barry Manilow, Frank Sinatra, all of those crooners who knew how to take a lyric and make it conversational and make it mean something. Even if you've heard that lyric 10,000 times, they could, you know, imbibe that lyric with some nuance that made it seem like it was the first time you were listening to it.
Is it more difficult to perform solo or individually than it is for a group kind of ensemble like we have in our shows?
Actually, it's harder to do the group stuff.
Really?
Yeah, because you're off stage and you're listening to the other people and you're having a good time and you're talking, and then it's like, oh, now I have to go on. And in a way, it kind of like, you know, you snap your fingers and you have to be ready. And when it's your whole night, you can ease into it and you're talking to the audience, and, you know, it's a lot easier to get comfortable on stage, actually.
Well, you're very comfortable, certainly, every time I've seen you, and you certainly make the audience feel that way. We're lucky to have you in our Chicago Cabaret Professionals, certainly as one of the great entertainers, vocalists in the Chicagoland area.
Thank you for constantly putting me to work. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's fun. We have a great group. Join Laura Freeman as she celebrates the ladies of the 60s, Leslie Gore, Mary Wells, the Supremes, and more. It's My Party, the girls and groups of the early 60s, 8 o'clock on May 12th. May 19th and May 26th at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee. For information, 773-278-1830. And Laura, I know you have a website. Maybe share that with our listeners.
Sure. It's www.laura, L-A-U-R-A, Freeman, F as in Frank, R-E-E-M-A-N, Sings, S-I-N-G-S.
Well, always a pleasure, kiddo, and I look forward to coming out and seeing it myself. And you never know, maybe Jimmy Mac will be in there, right?
For you that night, yes.
I appreciate it. Thanks, kiddo.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Freeman, one of the talented ladies of the cabaret in Chicago, and certainly very proudly part of Kevin Moore Presents. She's just a terrific lady, very, very giving, and certainly an integral part of our ensemble, and she does a terrific job. I'm just amazed that she remembers all the lyrics to all the songs that she does. She's got a million of them she's thinking about all the time. But this is going to be a lot of fun on May 12th, 19th, and the 26th. It's My Party, the girls and groups of the early 60s. 8 o'clock at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee. Again, for information, 773-278-1830. Autism spectrum disorder and autism are both general terms for a group of complex disorders of brain development. These disorders are characterized in varying degrees by difficulties in social interaction, verbal and nonverbal communication, and repetitive behaviors. Every 11 minutes, another family receives the devastating news that their child has an autism spectrum disorder. Help us change that. On Saturday, May 12th, at the 2012 Chicago Walk Now for Autism Speaks at Soldier Field, starting at 8 a.m., the 9th annual Walk Now for Autism Speaks is a fun-filled, family-friendly event and is our single most powerful force to fund vital research that will lead us to the answers we need. Experience the power of thousands united by a single cause by joining Walk Now for Autism Speaks. Autism is the fastest-growing serious developmental disorder in the United States. We need more volunteers to join our fight. Whether this is your first walk or the 9th, take the first step and register today. You will not only raise funds, but you will become part of a fun and supportive family-focused community. On the line with us right now is the award-winning businesswoman and a seasoned veteran in the financial industry whose motto is helping other people everywhere. A person strongly committed to education, community, and youth, involved parent, community leader, a person with her husband, John, who is sincerely dedicated in helping others, and the chairperson for the 2012 Chicago Walk Now for Autism Speaks, taking place Saturday, May 9th, beginning at 8 o'clock at Soldier Field, Miss Tricia Browers. Tricia, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, and certainly a very serious topic, and a topic that, given the information that, of course, you provided to me, is becoming even more serious as time goes on. 1 in 88 children and 1 in 54 boys are affected with autism.
That is correct. It is a staggering statistic.
Staggering. It's just freaking staggering.
It's really epidemic proportions, and if you really equate it, Kevin, how scary it is there are more cases of autism right now than when you look at pediatric AIDS, cancer, juvenile diabetes, cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, and Down syndrome combined.
You know, I had mentioned to Dana that a few years back I talked with someone from the Autism Society of Illinois, and those statistics were like 1 in 150, and that's changed that much in that short period of time.
In that short period of time, we went from 1 in 150 to 1 in 110, and now 1 in 88.
Well, tell, what is autism?
Autism is actually a neurological-based disorder, and what it does is it actually impacts a individual's ability to really function within the world by varying degrees. It can be based on behavioral, it can be communicative, where you've got someone who's nonverbal, and on the other end of the spectrum, you have somebody who's very verbal, but it really impacts their ability to function in the world around them. Generally, there's some sensory things, so they're either overstimulated or understimulated by things that are around them, but it really is a developmental brain disorder that, again, you've got repetitive behaviors, but they have the ability to communicate, but it's sometimes nonverbal and through augmentative ways.
It's not a disease. It's a developmental disability or neurological disorder caused by genetics, by a vaccine, by nutrition?
You know, that's the key question. We're not really sure what the cause is at this point in time. And if you polled parents, every parent would probably tell you, including myself, that it's probably a combination of multiple things. While we've determined there may be a genetic predisposition, and we've been able to look at different chromosomes and different things from even postmortem brain tissue, which is a really cool study that's going on right now, you've got certain pockets of the country that may have higher concentrations of cases, and so we have to sit back and say, is there something environmentally that's going on there? With statistics being what they are, I firmly believe that it's not an isolated issue, and that's why the research is so incredibly important right now.
We were talking the other day, Trish, and you had mentioned that there's a concentration of autism in the New York area in the United States and in the, was it Korea or?
Yeah, there is. There's concentrations in, you know, certain pockets in the East Coast. There's also pockets in the West Coast, and there's also pockets in Asia. So when you look at the different statistics that are out there, while ours are scary, you look at the statistics in Korea right now, they are far greater than what ours are. And so you have to sit back and say, why is that? Because holistically, if we think about it, we all have a different approach to medicine, right? So we can't just necessarily say that it is inoculations or immunizations, because at this point there's no scientific proof behind that. But if you were to look at it, we have different ways of how we approach diet, nutrition, environment. So, again, it kind of goes back down to that, is it a melting pot? Is it a combination of all of the above?
My first reaction, of course, when you mentioned Korea and the Far East and so forth, you think maybe it has to do with the diet or the nutrition that people eat, the tuna and fish, of course, that may be laced with certain amounts of mercury and so forth.
Absolutely, high concentration of metals. And when they do tests and studies on kids, they can pull hair follicles and they can do scientific tests to see, you know, what the metals and toxins are in a child's system. Generally, there is high counts of metal that are in the individual who is affected or impacted genetic feedback.
How old or what age does it start to show signs?
Well, children as young as 1 year can show signs at this point in time. And if you rewind time about 10 years ago, a lot of doctors were very nervous about diagnosing autism as a result of typical two-year-old behaviors and behavior patterns, you know, tantruming and spinning and headbanging and all of the interesting things that we go through with typical two-year-old behaviors and tantruming. However, there are differences And so now children as young as 16 months can be formally diagnosed, and the American Academy of Pediatrics has been fantastic, and now they're doing mandated autism screening. So you have to watch for what those immediate signs are. You know, if the child's not hitting their milestones, mm-hmm. if there's no babbling by 12 months, if there's no back and forth gestures, showing, pointing, reaching, no words by 16 months, no meaningful phrases. And a big one is if there's loss of speech or any signs of regression, mm-hmm. that's really the one to look at uh-huh. as well.
We had head banging when we were younger, but it was usually because of a nun with a ruler.
Or heavy metal, depending on what area you grew up in, right?
Well, it's outside of Chicago, you know how it goes. Not to
so
make
it's
fun
of it. It's a combination of both if you're from the south side. It's the heavy metal music and the nuns.
I was talking to my wife about this. I was telling her how we're going to have chat on a show and so forth. And I remember when we were younger, this never showed up. We never really knew about autism and stuff like that. But maybe the reason for that was when you saw a kid rocking back and forth, and I'm going back 30, 40, 50, 60 years or so, maybe they were just institutionalized, and that's where they stood, and there was no cure for that.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's actually a combination of things. I think, one, there was a huge amount of segregation. There was a huge amount, not only with, you know, children with developmental disabilities or with autism, but even with Down syndrome. Think about it. There was the special bus. There was the special
right.
classroom.
Right.
They were completely segregated from the rest of the mainstreamed kids. And for the majority, it would be, well, we kind of suggest an institution or some sort of a hospitalization or
right.
group home setting. Part of it was social stigma, which, believe it or not, we still deal with in, you know, today's present age, which is very frightening to me that we still have social stigma around disabilities. But also, if you really think about it, you could probably think of that one child that was socially awkward, kind of off by themselves. You maybe called them quirky. You maybe called them a little bit odd.
Yeah.
Okay. That probably was someone that went under the radar or undiagnosed based on not so great diagnostics back then, where today that would be someone that we would clearly say, this is someone on the spectrum, and this is where they're at on the spectrum.
Or became a politician. You never know. You have a young one who's autistic.
I do.
And you have another one that's not autistic and perfectly fine and so forth. Did you do anything different with one than the other, and how did it evidence itself?
Well, I actually laugh when I think about it, because my 17-year-old, when I was pregnant with her, I had a nightmare pregnancy. I was on bed rest for 16 weeks, went into labor 6 times, had multiple medications in my system, and she is my child at 18 months. We're saying her alphabet all the way through with no mistakes, and using a very cute version of W was Dubaboo, and, you know, adorable. And she's my honor student. She is just head and shoulders above the rest. She's a great kid. And my son, I was completely uneventful pregnancy, absolutely wonderful, no health issues or anything with him. I didn't do anything different diet-wise. I didn't do anything different, you know, vitamin-wise, medication-wise. Nothing that I ingested, per se, would be any different. And really, the only difference was is that I wasn't on medication like I was with my daughter. So it's interesting, because if you would think that there would be an issue, it should have been my daughter,
sure,
not my son.
Sure.
But my son is 14 years old now, and when I look at where time was back then, I often take that journey and say, was there anything? Could it have been? Because I think a parent's natural progression when they have a child diagnosed with special needs is they go through the, is it something that I did?
Right, wait. Human nature, right?
Right.
Let's talk nutrition, Trish. And we talked about gluten could be contributory towards this. Maybe not. Maybe it is. Who knows? What are some of the other foods, or what are some of the, you shouldn't eat tuna. I think we talked about tuna fish wasn't a good idea. Raw fish, sushi, and stuff like that. What else for a pregnant lady?
Well, from a medical perspective, again, everybody's body is going to respond differently based on what it takes in. If you think about it, there's people who have a peanut allergy that will put them into anaphylactic shock, and you've got someone that peanuts just don't necessarily agree with their system. So I don't want to scare women, and I don't want to scare moms into, if you eat this, it's the perfect formula, or if you eat that, it's a formula for disaster. You really have to look at, from a nutrition standpoint, like anything, what am I putting into my body? Is there a high concentration of metals? Is there a high concentration of preservatives or something that I really need to stay away from to be well all around, not just because you're pregnant? But I would say there are certain things that you do. My doctor always said, don't eat fish. When you're pregnant, don't eat fish because of the mercury that's in there. I really stood by that. And for me, it didn't necessarily make a difference. So I do have to stand back and say, okay, what else was it that was introduced? If you're genetically predisposed, what was introduced into your system to create this world that we live in?
Yeah.
So I don't want to scare women, but it's always good to have a diet. Talk with your doctor. Find out, you know, what are the latest studies? What are the latest nutritional information that's out there? What should you be avoiding based on your body, your genetic makeup? It's really hard to say, but it's really good to stay away from the type of things that we know could possibly be linked based on just the feedback that we have. And again, there's no magic formula, and there's no cure, and there's no box that says if you did all of this,
sure,
this
sure.
is the result.
Of course, things are different today. They were different 10 years ago. They were different 30 years ago. Are all the doctors tuned in to what symptoms pop up that...
Well, this is where we made really great strides with the awareness campaign and having the American Academy of Pediatrics actually do autism screening now. So, again, you know, rewinding time, it wasn't anything that was a part of the normal checkup pattern. It was, you know, are you hitting your milestones? But there wasn't specific milestone screening for autism itself. So there wasn't warning signs. Here's the top 10 things to look for. So I do think that doctors are more in tune now than what they were mm-hmm. because there's a greater awareness that's there, and there's better diagnostics. Because there isn't a blood test. So you're going to involve developmental pediatrician. You're going to involve possibly a, you know, social work of some kind or a pediatric neurologist into this. So they collectively are going to do testing to say, yes, we feel that your child is on the spectrum, and this is where they fall within, and here are the suggested therapies that we do. Because, again, there's no magic formula and there's no magic pill.
Is there an answer to the question why boys are four times more likely than girls to have autism?
That's one of the research projects that's actually going on. And it's interesting because it's not only about boys being more prevalent than girls, but here's something that's really interesting. You've got twins, okay, so identical twins. They're 99.9 genetically linked, right? And you have one child who has autism and one who doesn't. What happened there? So again, you know, you've got this genetic pool, right? And you basically shared a womb and you are identical. So what happened? What's the difference between the one child and the other child? And there are studies that are going on, and we've got the AGRE, which is the Autism Genetic Research Exchange, and they're doing all sorts of wonderful things in a very contained way so that they can make sure that the study is not tainted and that they're collecting, you know, information, samples, et cetera, the same from every family to try and demystify exactly what's happening.
Two questions. One is how long does autism last in a person, or is it always there? And can an older child or can an adult get autism?
This is really an interesting question. And I'll tell you, it's a question that was actually posed to me by a 9-year-old child, believe it or not, mm-hmm. because they were concerned, is this something that is contagious? Is this something that I can catch? Autism, it knows no discriminatory bounds. So it doesn't discriminate based on race, age, color, ethnicity, where you live. Everybody is really subject. So this is where we have to look at if you're genetically predisposed, what are the triggers? And you may have an adult, and it's funny because I've met people in my life where I thought to myself, I think they're on the spectrum because I think I have this little natural radar that happens mm-hmm. as a result of the life that I've lived, having a 14-year-old, where I come in contact and I go, oh, you know, that's interesting. You might be on the spectrum. And I think these things to myself. Of course, I don't verbalize them. Now, my son would probably verbalize it. Hey, you're like me, because he has no filter. But I will say that it isn't something that is necessarily, you know, onset since birth. When you look at the different studies, and this is more of, you know, our our chief scientific officer, I wish, was on the call because she can answer this more eloquently.
Well, we're going to have another call on this, I can guarantee you. And I are going to talk, and whoever else, or you guys can come into our studio here, because I think this is something that should be certainly discussed. The word should be gotten out. Of course, the walk is wonderful, but we should make sure that we have a little longer dialogue about this.
Absolutely. And, you know, I am no expert. I'm a mom, and I've done a lot of personal research. I don't hold a medical degree, but I'm very involved, and I try and read as much as I can. But going back to answer your question, is you may have a child that is typically developing and then all of a sudden regress. So does that mean that the autism is later onset? Does it mean that it was always there but something triggered it to progress it worse, where they started to regress? Is it a situation that, you know, an adult can turn around? Honestly, I think this is where all of the science is going to come into play and help us understand and learn more. I had stated before, they're looking at postmortem brain tissue. Mm. They're looking at the difference between a typical brain and a brain that's impacted by autism or autism spectrum disorder. They're trying to find all of these answers, and this is where I sit back and just say, you may be, you know, predisposed, but what's the trigger? And when does that trigger happen in your life?
Well, you and I are going to continue this conversation. Of course, the walk is on Saturday, May 12th, starts at 8 o'clock, 8 a.m. at Soldier Field. It's going to be a great route around the lakeside, lakefront, and certainly the 2012 Chicago Walk Now for Autism. If people would like to get some information, the phone number is 224-567-8573, or you can log on to chicago@autismspeaks.org. Tricia Browers, you're just a terrific lady. God bless you for what you do, but I'm going to insist upon you coming back and continue our conversation. If there's anything I can do about getting the word out, please tell your group that I'm always here for you. It's the way we were educated by the Jesuits, service for others, and I'm glad that we had the chance today, Trish, to talk a little bit. And, you know, like I say, God bless you for what you do, and we're always here for you.
Thank you. We really appreciate that, and we really hope that your listeners will come out and support us. It is our largest opportunity to advocate and fundraise, and we provide a lot of free services for families that would not be possible without walks like this.
We'll continue our conversation.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you, Trish.
Thank you.
Tricia Browers, again. Saturday, May 12th at Soldier Field, starting at 8, 2012, Chicago Walk Now for Autism Speaks. For information, 224-567-8573. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Daniel Self, Monkastrap, and, of course, the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical classic, Cats. Now through May 6th at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph. For information, 800-775-2000. Our good friend Laura Freeman, very talented lady. Her newest show, It's My Party, The Girls and the Groups of the 60s, on May 12th, 19th, and 26th at 8 o'clock at Davenport's, 1383 North Milwaukee. For information, 773-278-1830. And finally, Tricia Browers, who is the chairperson for the 2012 Chicago Walk Now for Autism Speaks, taking place Saturday, May 9th, beginning at 8 o'clock in the morning at Soldier Field. For information, 224-567-8573. A delight to talk with Tricia, and we're certainly going to continue our conversation and to continue to get the word out about autism. Very, very interesting and very necessary topic. Finally, a famous writer once said, "One ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words." I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
Changing. Why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid.
your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows.